Welcome, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanks.
To the Friends Are Forming Animation Forum.
You can clap.
Live. Oh my God. Completely spontaneous. Wow. There are so many people here. This is live from the Rhode Island School of Design.
Yeah.
Senior animators.
They're mostly
about
Brown students.
To graduate and other guests, other students at RISD, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Alan, tell us everything that has happened up to this point from the moment we stepped in the room until right now.
Well, we unpacked our stuff. We set it all up.
Yeah.
And it didn't work.
It worked like not a charm.
No.
Like the opposite. It worked like a curse, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, why delve into that?
Yeah, it's beside the point.
We are very honored to be here. We were invited by Amy Kravitz and Brian Papsiak.
Mm.
You know, I should say, I feel very comfortable right now in so many ways. One, I have a comfy chair. Two, this is our alma mater.
Right.
Both went to school here.
Yeah.
Worked in this very room.
Mm-hmm.
Used the very same facilities, minus the great computers and
drawing tables.
Yeah, cubicles that are all state-of-the-art, projector. There were no walls when we were here.
no windows.
Amy made me...
There was a fire pit to light.
Mm-hmm. There was a fire pit. Yeah. We would blink really fast to see the animation happen.
One of us
happen.
Would take one end of the film and just run it real fast past the flame.
Amy said, "You're not working hard enough." She tied both arms behind my back, blindfolded me, and said, "If you're a true animator, you can animate with your feet."
It's a different time.
Very different time.
A different time.
But it's good to be back. And do you, animators in this room, have any maybe questions? Sure. But thoughts? I new insights into this world of animation that you would like to share with us right now? We have a microphone. It's right there. Yes, say your full name.
Where you're from, blood type, parents' names.
Blood
Ted
type.
Wigan, B negative. I Newton, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yep.
Wait a second. I saw your film at the ICA.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
Very nice film. Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm going to give you a clap. Yeah. Was that the film you just finished?
That was my junior project.
Okay.
I Googled my way to Castlap yesterday and watched a whole bunch of them. And I was just wondering how that came about and what you got from it, how it happened.
Castlap is a web series that I started in 2009. Towards the end of 2008 because I was bored at my job. Things on the production I was on had slowed down. And I was pretty much just doing, filling out spreadsheets, which was very boring. So I just animated a kid eating a cat, and
typical,
just
normal thing.
It went from there. So I just started doing it as an exercise after I got laid off at the end of 2008, not for doing that at work. Totally different reason.
Fight Club.
Nothing. Lawsuit. What? So I started doing those on my own and putting them out on my website, and a friend of mine. Directed the website Cold Hard Flash to my site. It's a kind of a blog that just covers stuff going on in Flash animation. And the guy who runs that blog also works for a company called Mondo Media in the Bay Area. And they have Happy Tree Friends. I don't know if anybody's heard of that. So they basically, Batman, Spider-Man? So they just have all these web series that they sort of put under their umbrella, and they licensed Catslap from me for a small fee. They talked to me a little bit about franchising it, but that was never the intent of the project. So,
what does that mean to franchise?
Where I'd have regular seasons of the show, and do 12 episodes a year.
It's also like chastising people named Fran.
Right. so that's the story of that. I haven't finished it yet. I'm a little behind, but it will be finished very soon.
Cool.
Two more to go. Two more to go. But yes, catslap.com. Tell your friends.
Buy your Cat Slap t-shirts, lunchboxes, kites, thermoses. Tanks. What'd you say?
Thermoses.
Thermoses, mm-hmm. And vitamins. Mm-hmm. Other Ted, beautiful job. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Ted.
Yeah. Feels good to clap, not in general, but also just for your fellow classmates, right? Maybe they're clapmates today. Other ideas.
Well, you know, Joel, I'm going to interrupt.
Brian
Kapsiak
himself.
I'm going to interrupt before we hand off the mic for more insights. And since not everybody here, despite the requirement on the syllabus, is entirely familiar with Friends or Foreman, Animation Foreman,
yes.
A forum.
Yes.
I was wondering if you could just describe a little bit about just the nature of the podcast and what it is.
Sure. Well, in the animation world, there are many jobs that you can partake in that are different from just being an animator. I started off as an animator and worked actually with Brian on many projects at Olive Jar Animation. And there was kind of another part of myself that I wanted to express in maybe a different role. And that kind of led to teaching. It led to different aspects of doing voiceovers for animation. And when this whole podcast boom happened, I started listening to all these different comedy podcasts and realized there should be one about the world of animation, and why isn't there? So I looked online, and I found there are about 30 already. But I listened to some of these. Alan, you heard some of these.
No, I didn't.
Anyway. And they were very technical, kind of dry. It didn't feel like it was fully showing kind of what I love about the animation community, which is these great people, very quirky artists, lots of crazy ideas, always have, a short film they're working on, just great people that I wanted to maybe showcase in this new form of radio. And it's also something that is such a great relief to just focus on the audio,
mm-hmm.
but feel fulfilled with a project. It feels good to make these and put them out there. So that was kind of an experiment. And Alan and I have always had somewhat of a, friendly rapport. I mean, sometimes friendly.
That's fair.
Okay. Basically, I just needed someone that I could break to think of something mm-hmm. as I was talking. Mm-hmm. And I said, Alan, if I give you a bottle of Kentucky's Finest Bourbon, put you in a corner with a microphone, talk at you as just a focal point for me, use your recording studio mm-hmm. in Brooklyn and the proximity to most of the guests we could get in New York, would that be okay?
I thought it was a fair deal. That was pretty good.
Yeah. It worked. We tried it. And one thing I'll say is it's also great to collaborate. This is a project of kind of shuffling off layers, so no video to deal with, just audio, and also a collaborative piece, which it took me a while to get to that point where I could work, and I can't work that way with everyone, but I can with Alan, mm-hmm. and especially it's fun when we're editing, because we kind of have a good editing style together, and I found that it goes faster, and it also is better in the end. So we put together, we did a test at Ottawa 3 years ago.
Right.
Where we brought equipment kind of like this. And without getting permission from anyone, just started walking around, talking to people, made a little short show, showed it to or played it for Ron Diamond at Animation World Network. And he said, hey, we're actually starting up a brand new branch of Animation World Network that would be about blogging. Would you guys like to be on our website for absolutely free and never get paid? and no do it out of the kindness of your hearts. Mm-hmm. And I said, I need to confer with Alan. I gave him a shot of Jaeger, and he said, I'm shrugging my shoulders. Why because not? He didn't say anything. You just were like, yeah. If it has to be done,
yeah,
do it. Mm-hmm. I'm bored. So that went up, and it's actually been great because we can now post them whenever we make them. We were doing them about once a week for a while before.
Yeah, when I was unemployed. Yeah. That was easy.
Great motivation, mm-hmm, unemployment mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm thankful you had no work Me at too. That time because now he's a very busy guy, animator, working out of his own studio, made his own studio.
Yeah.
But still finds time to sit in the corner
and
getting
drink.
Drunk in front of a microphone.
There's always time for that.
Yeah.
Actually, I have a question about that. Mm-hmm. I'm Jessica Heron.
Sure.
Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
I'm from Seattle, Washington. I have no idea what my blood type is.
You should know.
I know.
You gotta know these things, emergency. People.
Just saying.
What? Wait, what? Do I like go to the emergency room that often? Not too often.
I think you can do it through an app now.
Or just like stick your finger on your iPhone. It makes you bleed. It's like it tells you your blood type.
Yeah, you prick yourself, put your bloody print on pad.
Oh, okay.
It scans it and tells you.
Okay. Yeah. Haven't bought that app yet.
Okay.
About that, the production studio that you've made. So what made you want to make your own production studio, and how's it been going? Any hard lessons learned?
What made me want to do that was working at studios for 8 years, small independent places, and also I've always wanted to do collaborative work with my friends and make content for the web or television with friends, and I thought that might be a good way to get some people together mm-hmm. under one umbrella and be able to talk about projects and work on projects together, because we all have, I think, very specific talents. You know, what Joel's good at is something I'm not good at, so us collaborating on this project works really well that way. You know, we both have different things to bring. So that was sort of the impetus, and that plus I started getting much bigger jobs from some of my freelance clients mm-hmm. and I need to hire people, and it just makes it easier come tax time and for legal purposes to just have a company and do everything through the company. Mm-hmm. And it's going very well. I started it officially in August of last year. These past 2 years I've earned more than I've ever earned and been able to employ, not all at once, but probably around 20 people. Mm-hmm. So it's been going very well. I'm not sure what's going to happen the rest of the year because I'm taking some time off.
Cool.
But hopefully I'll be able to keep it going.
Yeah, is what you make, is it mostly for TV, the web?
Primarily for broadcast, some web stuff, but mostly TV, yeah. My biggest client has been The Electric Company on PBS. I don't know if anybody knows that show. It's a kids' educational show teaching phonics and reading. And I was able to do several large projects for them over the last year and a half, 2 years. And that on top of all the other freelance I've been doing on the side.
Mm-hmm. What are the kind of production companies that you worked for?
I was at one studio in Boston for almost 5 years, Soup to Nuts Productions. I don't know if anybody's heard of that place.
Yeah.
We did a lot of work for television while I was there. And it was always just constant stress. Tight deadlines, no money. Then I was at a place in New York called Animation Collective. I don't know if anybody's heard of that place either. And that was same, you know, no time, no money, tons of work. It just didn't, it wasn't sustainable. And so that's why that studio collapsed. That plus the crash of the economy really hurt.
So did you get the Soup to Nuts right after you got out of school, or what was
I did by accident. Actually, it's probably all your fault. I didn't, when I got out of school, I had no idea what to do. That was one thing that I sort of felt RISD didn't prepare me for, was how to even look for a job. I didn't even know how to look. We didn't have the internet back then.
I felt that I had some insight.
Well, I didn't.
Okay.
Well,
what? If you come
I'm
to
telling
class,
my story, Joel.
Okay, I'm just
you can tell your story when you get asked a question. You did? Where did you know how to look? Where were you looking?
Animation business class 101 that we were required to take for the entire year.
I don't
year.
Remember that one.
Really?
No.
Oh. Okay.
Anyway, I didn't know where to look for a job. I had no idea how to do it. but I eventually got in touch with MTV and started a long dialogue with them, which didn't materialize into an actual job. I was actually taking a test for a show that they were producing when I got a phone call out of the blue from Soup to Nuts asking me to send in a resume and, or not a resume, a portfolio and some animation for them to look at. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't have a portfolio, so I photocopied some figure drawings and just rolled them up and sent them in along with my senior film. And they luckily liked my drawings enough to hire me. And I was there for 5 years. Started out as an assistant animator and ended as a senior animator. The nice thing about working in a small place like that is you get to do everything, every part of the production process. So while I was there, I did everything from voice acting to audio editing to composing and recording music for shows to storyboarding, design, animation, all that. Cool. But yeah, it was on the recommendation of Amy and her husband Steve that they give me a call.
So what was your first job out of animation? Then I'll give up the mic so that somebody else can talk.
My first job was working at Olive Jar Animation Studios, and I believe Brian, you came through to look at work in progress here, and right. Mm-hmm. You were just a guy on the street that said, "Hey, you look like you like looking at things."
Yeah. I like the cut of your jib.
Scouts came, and after I finished my film, I got a call saying, "Hey, this is a new project. We looked at your stuff at RISD, and we're here to visit. Would you like to come in and see what you think?" So that was nice. It was good. It was, I know things are different now with that scenario, but I realized that it was because I actually made this film, that I had something tangible that I could show to someone. I didn't have a demo reel at that point, but I think people can tell a lot about your work ethic and possibilities from just seeing your personal artwork, which is kind of a nice feature. I mean, having the demo reel, the resume, all your papers in order is essential. Having this extra thing that you made is from out of your brain.
Right.
Really gives people an insight into how you will be in the work environment, what it'll be like to work with you creatively. And so it's kind of an edge up.
You want to know what those insights about you were?
Yes. Wait, you should be on mic.
Okay.
Well, Olive Jar has been long gone since you guys were kids, but there was a very distinct philosophy about the country, about the company, which was, why do something simply if you can do something not simply? Or is there a way that you could take more time and many unnecessary steps to do things?
Can we make this harder?
Because, ultimately, sorry about the sirens, but you're not going to get rid of them here. Because ultimately, yes, I'm making something of a joke, but the work ethic is most certainly visible in projects that are very ambitious, and if they're pulled off, you know. So we definitely thought that the Herculean effort and pyramidal labor, Sisyphean labor attached to your project said something about your character, and we thought this guy will get things done.
You should tell them what your project
you
was.
Should describe your project now that
yes.
these sirens are gone.
Yes. Brief synopsis of this project. This table layout right here was my desk. And I was painting on sheets of oak tag that were like that big. And the reams of paper that I bought, because it says it on the box how many pounds they are, all of the paper I used was half a ton. And I had it stored in that other room over there and basically just lived in this room and painted on these giant sheets of paper. Why giant sheets of paper? Exactly. Exactly. I was painting with big brushes, and I liked how the brush strokes would animate and you could get only, you could get that effect if you had a big tool to work with, and just continued doing that throughout the length of this long, long, insane film, which in the film characters are kind of insane, and it's a maze, claustrophobic, and it was the harder way of doing something. But I should say, with time, after, okay, it's taken 10 years. I now look at that.
It took you 10 years to get rid of all that paper.
It did. I had to recycle a lot of it, actually. I like the effort that I put forth. I think there it does look, it's kind of awkward, but I now appreciate that in a different way. Before, I was just like, ugh, it didn't look the way I wanted it to look. But now it's I kind of like that schizophrenic quality about it.
But Joel, that whole project was based in inventing vocal characters, which you have carried through to this very point.
That is true, Amy Kravitz. She just said that part, that the main focus actually was voice acting, and that has been a thread throughout all I've done up until this point doing a podcast.
And it's not just voice acting, but inventing characters with your voice.
Yeah, so your senior projects can actually tell you a lot about you. And that's something that I've taken away from it that I've been able to put into other projects, fueling new work as an artist after school, which I didn't know I'd be doing as much as I am, and I enjoy it. Period. Hi.
Hey.
Who are you?
Dylan Ladds.
Hi, Dylan.
I guess we've kind of talked about this already, but now that you're doing this podcast and, you know, you've said it was kind of a relief to not have to deal with video, has it changed the way you watch films and animations?
With editing, it does. Okay. Because we actually edit the podcast down a lot.
Right.
And it's a way of getting to something that is going to be fun and listenable to the audience. That process of doing that, you get better at it the more you do it. I have done films with video since then, and I'm currently doing that. I found that all of the paring down of this audio just for audio's sake is working its way into how I edit now. And I'm much tighter with editing. And I know by this process what I can throw out and it still be okay. So in that regard, yes. And I think when I see a lot of just films, TV in the world, you can really tell the skills of the editor, both good and bad. I'm much more in tune with that.
Yeah, it's definitely heightened our sensitivity for editing. And when we see things that are poorly edited, it's very frustrating. It's interesting.
Do you edit the podcast visually at all, even though they're...
Yes.
Long? Well, it's looking at the waveforms.
But I mean, you know, structurally.
Yeah, in terms of painting a picture, yeah. Yes. They're, when I describe things, I know there are certain things that I can do by knowing that people will be imagining what we're talking about. So like voices and different things like that. But also sometimes I describe, like you guys saw, things that Alan is doing with his face, his gestures, that are completely accurate. But knowing, it's fun for me to know that someone will be listening to it another time, that I want to describe kind of what's happening. So yeah, I mean, that's what I love about podcasts myself, actually. And even radio is how it taps into your imagination and you are kind of painting a picture.
And it's more intimate than television most of the
time.
And
it's, yeah, you take it with you. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I mean, it's even more intimate because it's in your pocket and you take it, you're out in the world doing chores, commuting.
Hearing voices
in your head. I like that aspect when I listen to podcasts, and so it's kind of, it's like a magical little thing that makes it enjoyable to create, and hopefully that works for people. I don't know. We get very little feedback, which is probably a good thing.
Well, Terry Foreman always gives us feedback. My father writes back And he gives,
he's very good.
He gives me criticism on every episode. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
So say when you're editing something like this specific one, how much of it is like reorganizing and how much of it is just cutting out boring stuff?
Probably.
You know what I mean?
That's a good question.
It develops linearly, obviously. Right. Like we're having a conversation kind of.
I'd say it's probably 70% cutting and 30% reorganizing.
Okay.
Sometimes we will do an intro and outro most of the time after we've done the interview. So then we put the intro, you know, at the beginning and then have a transition into the interview and then have the outro at the end. We have a bunch that we've been layering together, three people in the same show from three different interviews that we're not intercutting, but we're reordering, like, who would be good to have first, second, third, and then how do we transition into that?
Well, we've also taken pieces of a conversation from later in the interview and moved it ahead and done that before.
There's a lot of mad-libbing editing.
A lot of mad-libbing.
We did a Skype interview once.
Yeah.
And there was the Skype delay.
Yeah, yeah.
Also, the speaker...
It was terrible.
The speaker kept pausing all of the time. Sometimes between... In a sentence, he would pause and say, a lot, which I do too.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, that's okay.
We go in and cut out all of those. And that one took a lot of editing because it was kind of unlistenable to play it the way we heard it or we experienced it. So yeah, that required a lot of editing. And there's also a lot of like final mixing and making a template that we have in Pro Tools so things are panned the right way. There's actually a lot of engineering in it, even though it's just talking. But it makes for a better cohesive show.
And sound effects and music.
And then sound effects and music. So every time we have our producer, oh, who's here? Computer. Mm. Hi, computer. Mm-hmm. How are you? Every time I say computer, Alan has to add the computer sound effects. But computer, what do you think about that?
It's great.
But I've contributed editing in some computer sound effects.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. And then music sometimes when I say, what's the theme music for that, Alan? And he looks at me like,
I have to write a theme song. Great.
Yeah. Other questions? Comments? Interpretive singing.
Hi, I'm Nick Craig.
Hi, Nick.
I'm from Taunton, Massachusetts. And I have kind of a general fear about the end of the year. Mostly eating food. Well, the rapture.
On Sunday.
Actually, yeah. I'm actually counting on the rapture at this point in time.
At least you'll get to have your
show. But just sustaining myself both financially and health-wise, doing animation. And I just wanted to know how much of a rocky start I should anticipate with that.
Well, I would say the thing that I was surprised by is anyone can get a job in animation, especially after the training you guys have had. You can get a job in animation. The hard part is finding a job that you like in animation.
Right.
The opportunities are there, especially now, which I'm sure Alan's much more familiar with. Projects come up. They want freelance people just for a small amount of time. And, you know, if you can show Flash, whatever, you can get these jobs, but they can be difficult. Real quick, one of the first projects I worked on was this pilot for Cartoon Network, which was really bad, horribly written, actually kind of was un-PC and a bit racist. Anyway, it only was on air, I think it aired twice. I hated the story so much. I saw all of these opportunities to fix the story. I had no ability to fix the story. I was just the animator. But having said that, it's kind of a good rite of passage, perhaps, that you go through that because you understand what it is to be an animator. And the animation was actually really good. It had to be super fluid, and I learned a lot about character animation with that one particular project.
As much as you might work on things that you might not be terribly interested in, is it the worst job in the world, even if you're kind of crushed creatively?
No. Garbage collecting? So.
My first job out of RISD was as a cashier at the RISD store.
Nice.
Because I couldn't find any work. So I got all the juniors coming in saying, I thought you graduated, man. I was like, yeah, I did. Yeah, the jobs in animation, now everything is kind of like contract and freelance stuff, so it's short-run stuff, projects. But you'll still get a lot of series production that goes like 12 to 18 months. But as an animator, it's going to be a little bit of a struggle initially, because when they hire you straight out of school, they're going to pay you less, which is just the reality. And so the salaries are not going to be great. You'll be able to do it. I was able to squeak by. You just have to be frugal and try and pick up as much freelance as you can on the side.
But, one thing that helped me was I volunteered at a grade school in Cambridge teaching kids how to animate. I was not prepared for how fulfilling that was, because after working in the studio as an animator, sometimes 15-hour days, I now was in an environment that really felt like being an artist in residence. It was. And it was, I mean, I was volunteering, but I got to utilize all of my skills and what I enjoy about animation in this new environment with kids who were loving it. And it felt so good. That type of feeling motivated me to kind of keep going. But I used what we made as part of my reel. Now I was a director, and I mean, just by going and doing it. And it's true. I mean, I directed them, and we made these films. And I kept kind of finding projects like that and really coming back to that now with what I'm working on. But when you do things like that, people are so appreciative of what you know, and you also realize how much you have been learning as you've been in school, that there are people who want to help you keep doing those things. And so parents found grants for us, and I did this for 3 years. It's still going to this day. I've had my students come in and take over, and they've been making films for almost 10 years now. And that is something that I wasn't aware of when I was thinking about my future in this room, making that horrible film, that you actually can apply it. If you're creative, which you all are, you can apply it in so many different ways that can lead to actual work. So that actually, I'm now teaching at Boston, and that I was told by the hiring committee years later, working with those kids was the final thing that pushed me ahead of the other candidates. And it was just something I had to do because I was kind of in this frustration in the studio.
Hey.
Hi.
Wait, how long did you work in like animation studios before you worked with the kids?
I was at Olive Jar for an entire year, and I didn't work with the kids until after that experience. I moved on to a job as a teaching assistant with Steve Sobotnick, you might know him. And that allowed me the time to do my own animation. When I was an animator, the last thing I wanted to do after working for 15 hours a day was come home and make a new animated film. What I would say now is, try it out. Try animation out in the world. It's good. Another route, though, is, I'm sure you've heard this, find a job that pays the bills, but that gives you the freedom to kind of keep exploring. It's hard to put that into practice right when you get out and you're faced with loans and all of that, but you can do it in small ways. It can be a gradual thing. And be open to things like that. What would you say, Alan, working as an animator?
Sure. I've been doing it ever since I got out of school, working professionally. I have not made a personal film since my senior project. I've not done a whole lot of personal art. Being in a, well, I was about to say, being in the studio setting, it is exhausting because you're drawing all day long and you're animating all day long. So when you get home, the last thing I wanted to do was draw anymore. So I started getting more interested in music, and I started playing music more regularly as my art form outside of work. So I did that for a long time. And now that I'm working for myself and making my own schedule, I'm back into making personal films and working on art projects. I'm working on a series of drawings for trying to put together a show for later this year. Working on a few different personal animated projects. So that's been really invigorating for the past couple of years, is to get to a point in my career where I can say yes to things and no to other things and take some time off to do what I want to do.
I'll say something else about you.
Yeah, what?
Alan.
Yeah.
Alan was directing a show called Three Delivery, which I'm sure all of you have seen.
Sure. Everybody's a huge fan.
But you were able to work it out so that you did the theme music for the show.
No, I was asked to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, my boss wanted, because he knew I was in a band, he wanted us to do the theme song and score every episode. So we did all the music for the entire series.
I like how that was this other thing that you kept going with,
yeah,
and how it kind of came back.
Yeah, it's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a lot of work.
Mm-hmm. Was it?
Directing and scoring? Yeah.
That's two jobs.
It was two jobs.
Yeah.
And several. Can I add that while he was doing that, he found time, he came to talk, and he did the sound design for...
That's
right. I said, do you know any sound designers that could help the student? He said, well, I'll help her. And he did the sound design for Project Hero, just out of the goodness of his heart.
I did a couple for a couple of Pratt students last year, too. I helped out with their sound work. It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
You need something to do.
Yeah. And you're... Because sleeping, really...
I don't really sleep.
He really doesn't.
I really don't.
That's what his DP was about.
It was.
Yeah.
Okay, I was also wondering about your guys' experience with animation in, the installation situation. And is it always, something really separate from stuff that would be made in the industry?
Animation in fine art, in the fine arts world? Joel knows a lot more about that than I do.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is there are a lot of people making animation for the gallery that are not animators.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. It's kind of a fad right now. Curators love it. A lot of it is minimalist. And people who are art collectors love how this moving image is now out there, and it's different, and it's kind of fun.
Oh, what's that one guy you were showing me? The walk cycles?
Julian Opie. That's it. Yeah. Julian Opie. I hate him. Sorry, Julian. Yeah, I know you listen to the podcast.
That's all right.
And love him. There you go, Julian. At the same time, because he found a way of using just Flash to make works of art in galleries that sell for hundreds of thousands of dollars. He uses just Flash. He has people videotapes them walking on a treadmill, rotoscopes them, takes out a lot of the detail. So, you know, it's like, 15 frames he's working with, puts it onto a vertical HD screen in the gallery. It's just on a loop, walking, walking, walking.
And that's
it. He had a show at the Barbara Krakow Gallery in Boston. I asked how much those were going for, $75,000. I know. But he has made so many of them and has put them in public spaces all throughout the world. He has made these portraits.
Oh, I hate those.
That
oh,
are just Jesus. traced in Flash from people's pictures. And those sell for, you know, like $20,000. He has made his own industry based on an idea, based on something that's very simple. So I got to take my hat off to him. But your traditional animation skills, if you make something for the gallery and you put it in, people are attracted to it and they don't know why. they just don't know what good animation is. So there have been shows I've been to where there's like one thing in the corner that's beautifully animated and all this other stuff that's big and just chugging and has no sense or system to it. People flock to that little tiny little piece. It's a good time to start thinking about that, though, because it is happening, and that's why I'm interested, because I want to show what quality animation can be like in the gallery and not just make it a marketing thing.
Cool. Thanks.
Sure.
Yeah, hi. My name's Dylan Hayes. I actually didn't know you guys went to RISD. Around what year was that? Was it the same time, like both of you?
We were in the same class, yeah.
The year 2000.
2000.
Mm-hmm. That's like, I don't know, I'm really like interested in like RISD's past, and that's kind of like the golden era, in this nostalgic way that I really have no idea or like base it off of. I was curious like if you could talk like, I don't know, what was like the FAV community like back then? Because I feel like RISD has like, at least like the late 90s has a sort of reputation of being like kind of this crazy like zany art school, and it's gotten kind of tamer since then. It still has this like, you know, like quirks, but I don't know, is that true, or just you speak about that experience a little?
Sure. That's a great question, actually.
That is a very good question. It was a really tight group, our FAV class. I mean, it was a very tight group. We were all very close with each other, and we did do, we had that that improv group that we did. Yeah, you weren't a part of it, the Realms?
Oh, yeah.
Realms video project. Yeah. Did you do that ever?
Or no? I sat in.
Did you?
And watched.
Yeah. We would hijack the blue studio. Just now the green studio. At night with a few cases of beer and go in there and just do improvisational video projects with, live backgrounds being keyed in. Different themes, different costumes, stuff like that. We got in a lot of trouble, I think, for that because we were breaking a lot of beer bottles. We also built a fort in this room. The animators, in this corner here, we were going a little nuts one night, and so we went over to the black studio. Is that still black?
Yeah, it's still
all right. Black. And we took a bunch of cardboard from sets that had already been used for live action students, and we brought the cardboard over here and built this big fort in the corner as a degree project free zone, so we could go in there and just chill out and put a little couch in there. We drove to a friend's place and got a couch, put it in there, some magazines, decorated it. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, a lot of my stories from my experience at RISD, I don't think I could really talk about in public. Tell you all about them sometime over a drink, but it was pretty crazy. We did some pretty crazy things.
I think that fort that we built was when you and I really bonded, actually.
I think that's when we first really...
Yeah. It was called Fort Beck because Beck's Midnight Vultures album had just come out, and that was our studio album that we all listened to. Yeah. And yeah, Fort Beck was our sanctuary away from degree projects. One thing about that group at that time was because classes were happening during the day, and I had to use most of the room to make my work, I became nocturnal for about 4 months, strictly nocturnal. I would come in at about 9 p.m. and work through the night until like 10 the next day. Other people joined me, which was fantastic, and we had this really tight nighttime community up here with people working in different pockets of the room. And that is a fond, fond memory. It was kind of, we're in this battle together. You learn a lot about people because of that. And I've continued to work with those same people to this day. And it was also a time of extreme fatigue in work. But also, we were shooting on film, a lot of us. And you had to get help from your fellow people in order to just bring cells over to the Oxbury
next door. I did it all myself.
Next door. What's that?
I did it all by myself.
Except for Alan.
He was the first one done.
Yeah. That is right.
And like with that, that's kind of interesting because I feel like with like the move from film to video for like shooting animation, like the film class here is like really tight specifically because they rely on each other so much. And as like we've moved away from using film, we become like sort of more like isolated and like focused on your like individual work, which isn't a bad thing. It's just like I think it's an interesting shift that sort of happened over the past like decade. I don't know.
You know, that very thing is what has made me want to get out of the studio and do more animation with people.
Right.
And that's something that you can do now because you can, because of the technology, you can take your shooting station with you on a laptop anywhere and work with other people. I missed that. So it's kind of, it's gone full circle. I've had my own private studio, but now I want to, the technology, ironically, is allowing me to be more social with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good. That was a good point.
I heard someone here beatboxes, and that there's a challenge that's been thrown down.
Yeah.
And that the stakes are very high.
Someone's been questioning Joel's honor.
I wasn't aware there was a challenge.
Oh, I thought you created it.
I did?
Yeah, Brian said that you've been posting it online all week.
Oh, yeah, I remember. And I'm calling you out.
Yeah. Tell us who you are.
My name's Ethan Fish.
And you are a beatboxer?
No, okay. Not really.
Okay, well, it's good because I'm not either. Okay, how this is going to work is...
I was actually wondering if we could do like a beatbox version of the jingle. The podcast jingle?
Oh. Go for it, yeah.
That is the greatest thing I've ever heard. Alan, what do you think?
Sure, yeah. It's a song I wrote for another job. They didn't use it.
They didn't use it. So we did. Okay. This is the FFAF, Friends of Foreman Animation Forum, jingle theme song performed a cappella with beatbox and siren. Alan, start us off.
You want me to count you in?
Yeah, count me in. Count me down. Count
one, me down. Two. One, two, three, four.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God.
Yes.
I know. No,
you did, Bob.
You might be surprised. We did not even rehearse. Any other comments, quirks, sound effect quirks?
Yeah, that side of the room has been awfully quiet.
Hello, I'm Kenneth.
Hi,
hello.
I'm from Toms River, New Jersey. Mm. And I would like to know how nervous were you guys doing sort of your first podcast, just like going around the streets in Ottawa?
Oh.
I don't remember. I was drunk the whole time.
Alan was drinking beer. And bourbon.
I don't even remember doing it.
It was very cold. I do remember that. Remember how cold it was?
Yeah, it was cold.
And
I remember that part.
I think that helped with nerves.
Yeah.
Because everyone was shivering.
It was too cold to feel.
It was about 30 degrees. And we were set up at the artist's picnic, or the animator's picnic, outside. There was a heater on the inside, but it was making too much noise. So we had to go outside. And I think that helped to kind of make it easier, actually. But then we went to the Arts Court Center. Have you guys all been to Ottawa? Okay. So the Arts Court Center, where they sell the DVDs, on a day where they had the different animation schools.
Oh, right. Now I remember.
And they had all their booths set up. Mm-hmm. Or booths. Booths.
Booths. Booths.
Like utes.
Booths.
And we brought our equipment in, and we're just going to try to get some of the filmmakers after the meet the filmmakers. And to our surprise, they said, "Hey, do you want?" Did they ask us if we wanted to use it? Or we just
no, we just
down.
Took it. Yeah,
we just there's we a just vacant booth. We plopped down, set up all of our equipment with microphones. It looked like we were supposed to be there. No one said anything. And at one point, they went and got us chairs.
Yeah.
We had three microphones. We pointed one just out at an empty chair, and people came by and sat down, and we just improvised with them. And there's a lot of footage of that we'd never put together.
Thank God.
But that also kind of, that was an interesting moment where I think Alan and I, there's no pressure. We're just talking to each other mm-hmm. as people walked by. No one was listening to us. So a certain kind of rapport developed. And when people did sit down, it was kind of a fun back and forth like that. So that kind of, to me, was a pivotal moment. And went back to listen to that part, and it was, I think, the funniest of it.
Yeah, that was fun. It was a good time.
And then the following year, we signed up to be media, right. which you can just do at yeah. Ottawa. No one asks for credentials or anything. We used the AWN site being on it as our, I don't know, backer, and we got media passes, which get you so much
whoa,
stuff.
Whoa, whoa, you got a media pass.
They gave us one media pass, which we split.
No, I had to buy my own pass.
No, I paid you back.
No, you didn't.
I did.
You did?
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
No, I did. I did. No. Thank me publicly now.
I don't think you did.
But that was also a big moment, I think, because they treated us with as if we were going to report on the show as right. actual journalists.
Yeah, their media relations person took care of us.
We got a bag of swag.
Got a bag of swag.
They had it like scheduled in for her to tail us, to help us go from event to event. Anyway, they soon realized that was not the case. And they really enjoyed it. And
well, the director of the festival had a lot of
yeah,
fun with us.
Chris yeah. Robinson was reluctant to sit down with us, and then he really had a great time. And next year, announcing it here first, we have been asked to host the closing ceremonies of the festival as a Conan Andy Richter type of thing, is what he said.
Right.
So we'll be there at the very end when no one else is there.
Everybody's already left.
Yeah.
Right.
It would be like just back in the Brooklyn studio, just like talking at the wall.
Yeah.
So now I don't feel nervous at all for some reason. It actually has helped with public speaking to do this. And teaching helps with that too.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Hi, I'm Will Muzzy.
Hi.
I was just wondering preliminarily if either of you spoke any languages besides English.
Ancient Latin.
All right.
Well, yes. They pronounce these differently. Yeah.
No, I don't speak any other languages.
In pictura est puella. Alter in pictura, nomine Flavia. I know a lot of prayers. Gloria Patri, Filio Spiritus Sanctus. Semper ubi sub ubi. Always wear underwear. Why do you ask?
Yeah.
I was just wondering, I'm just interested in learning languages, even though I haven't really had the time to, what with being in art school. But I was just wondering if you thought it was a valuable skill to have in the animation field, what with animation kind of stretching all around the globe with the internet, or if it was becoming less valuable because there are so many animators now that you don't have to look outside of the city you live in for any particular skill set.
I think it's good to learn.
Would help our interviews with
it would help
people in Ottawa.
Yeah, I was gonna say if you know
Chinese,
French, Canadian, English, mm-hmm. that's kind of nice. When to put the right boots and whatever into your conversation. Actually, don't do that. They don't like that.
Yeah.
I would say language. In general, if you know multiple languages, you're going to have more opportunities to travel places, get jobs. If you're in animation, there might be a studio that you could go to and provide something specific if you know the language. I know Estonia is a big animation capital, Poland.
France.
France, yeah.
And they often don't accept you if you don't speak French.
They don't accept you as a person.
As a human.
They let you into the country, but they do not accept you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
isn't animation a universal language?
Oh, Amy, it is. Animation is a universal language. Why, you can speak through the art of movement, frame by frame.
I think, well, you know, it does translate. It is something, these international animation festivals, you are bonded immediately to other people in different countries because you share this masochistic talent. It is, you've all been to Ottawa, and there is kind of that immediate sense of community because it is the art of movement frame by frame and how to control that. And I think it is a way of bridging the gap, bringing people together.
Hurting yourself. Hurting each other.
Yes, hurting each other. But ultimately for good?
No.
Sometimes not for good.
Sometimes.
Either. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Deanna.
Hi.
Hello.
Brian showed us some of the Olive Jar stuff from way back, like a lot of the kids' commercials, and I wanted to know what you found more fulfilling, like kind of designing for children, or I don't know like how much you worked on that sort of stuff, but like designing for children versus designing with children, and like what the difference is with that, and like, I don't know.
Alan, do you want to take the designing for children?
Yeah.
Question?
Sure.
I'll take the other one.
All right. I just had my first experience with educational television, and I'm very glad it's over. because there's so many people who have to comment on everything. Everything's done by committee. There's the education advisors, the curriculum advisors, lawyers. Designing for children is very difficult. Also because the language they use at the different networks or production studios when they want to see something out of you is so vague. They'll say, can you make it cuter? I want to go, aw, when I look at it. And those are very... I mean, how do you do that? Can you make it prettier? Well, pretty is an awfully subjective thing, so you end up doing a lot of different rounds of revisions just to try and get into someone else's head. That's the hardest thing, is getting into somebody else's head.
Committee's head.
Or some committee's head, yeah. It can be fun, though, because you can do simpler drawings, and that's always a nice break. I'm kind of looking forward to doing more adult things soon in the near future, so I don't have to deal with that kind of committee.
And also, there are things you can't
There's so much
draw.
You can't draw and you can't show.
Yeah. Get notes on all that stuff.
I know.
I've recently been working more with kids. Did these two workshops in New York this semester, making animation with kids, and it's kind of rekindled my joy of working with people, because kids are actually, it's interesting with what committees want to okay for kids to see and what kids are actually into. Two very different things.
Yeah, that's what I figured.
Yeah, okay. They're much savvier. They're much more creative. They are much more inquisitive than a lot of the shows give them credit for. And so making animation with them, I'm very excited to keep doing that because and putting those films out there, because it really shows what kids are into and what they like, and they are the committee, basically.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of just like children's animation has gotten so much more sterile over the past decade. Like, I don't know, I haven't been watching that much, but like, I'm not going to see Rocko's Modern Life on TV, and like, it's kind of sad.
Yeah.
I don't know what that has to do with, but I'm sure the committees are responsible.
Few studios let kids be kids, especially with the voice acting.
Yeah.
They're very directed, and it's not how kids talk.
No.
I especially can't stand any show, commercial, whatever, that shows kids trying to talk like adults. Oh, mm-hmm. My God.
Oh. Joel, speaking of kids, Is Isaac anywhere?
Alan. I know you said you should not come.
No, it's all right. I'll just leave the room for a while.
Okay.
Have a good time. I'll see you later.
There's
no,
this...
No, it's okay, really. Fine, I'm out of here.
Enjoy the podcast. See you later.
One of our... He's now an unofficial roadie of the podcast. We tried to say stay in Boston today, but he really wanted to come. He's saying that he's ready.
Yeah, I just talk more kids.
You just want to talk to the kids? All right, why don't you?
Yeah, I just want to come.
Okay, you have to come up to the microphone though.
Hey.
Isaac, how old are you?
I'm 6, and I know about fire engines and ketchup.
Okay, that.
I got some.
Oh!
Oh my God, it's got magic!
Don't go grab.
I just want this. Can I catch it? Throw it to my head.
Don't throw it at his head.
Isaac,
we gave you some before. You have your pockets are full of ketchup packets.
I know. Okay, I want to pick a story that's animated. I want it to be about trees.
Okay, what about the trees?
Well, I want to show a little seed that's growing, and it's going to make a tree.
Okay. So your question might be, how?
Yeah, how would you take a seed, draw it, and then make it grow to a tree? What's the problem?
Well, first you're going to want to draw a seed.
Okay, I'm doing it right now. Check it out. Is that good?
Yeah, he's drawing with ketchup on a sheet of paper. You should tell everyone.
Yeah, okay.
And you're going to want to drag with your finger through the ketchup a little plant coming out of the seed.
How's this?
It's okay. And then you're going to just keep making it. Just keep the ketchup coming from your pockets.
Okay, I got 24 and 7.
But
that's really good.
24 and 7 packets?
It looks
24/7.
Really big. And just keep growing it bigger up into a tree, just like a tree looks.
Is this good? It looks like a monster.
Well, it looks like a tree monster.
Yeah, but now I'm changing it to a monster. Hey, a seed to a monster. That's a good idea for a show.
Isaac, I think maybe you should go work on that in the corner. What do you think about that?
I'll make another monster.
Okay, why don't you go make another monster, and Alan will help you. No, Alan's coming back.
Hey, guys.
Is he gone yet? Is that kid gone?
I love you so Christ. Much. Why aren't you hugging me?
I don't think he cares.
I'm not capable of hug.
Hi, Amy Crack.
Go sit with Amy.
Oh, that's nice. Amy's like, she's showing him how to draw.
How did he get here from Brooklyn?
Suitcase?
Probably.
Yeah.
And following Isaac, I just really want to hand the microphone.
Kyle's presenting at the FAV Senior Show, which is happening this week, Wednesday through Saturday.
Oh, good plug.
Yeah. I wanna
we haven't gotten the plugs yet.
That is the very next thing. Mm. Senior Show happening starting Thursday.
Starting tomorrow.
Wednesday
at
tomorrow.
7 p.m. until Saturday.
What we'll do is edit this podcast tonight, put it up on the web, and so that everyone can go and buy All tickets right. for tomorrow. That's
well,
good. That's good.
I mean,
that's happening.
In any case, even if you don't do that, it went well. It was pretty good.
Yeah. Good turnout?
It was good. It was a good turnout.
Yeah. Okay, so the show went well. You guys are now officially graduated. All your projects finished. And now it's time to go out into the world and take over with the others who are left behind. Congratulations.
Yes, congratulations.
Class. Rhode Island School of Design, Senior Animators, 2011. On the Friendship Foreman Animation Forum. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you. Alan, you can get back to New York now.